Okay, let's start. In the intellectual and political climate of the 16th century, the rapid expansion of the overseas colonies of the European states could have only one true persuasive justification at its core: to bring Christianity, and therefore both salvation and civilization, to the primitive races that were encountered. Without that spirit at its core, the colonial expansion could be nothing but a mercenary and self-serving enterprise. Without it, conversely, it was transformed in the contemporary mind into a just and righteous mission. It is clear that in actual fact, many of the pioneers in the New World beneath that justification had other principles more deeply enshrined in their motivations upon making the first contact with the Taino peoples of the Greater Antilles and Bahamas. Columbus recorded in his journal on the very first day of his arrival that they could all be subjected and made to do all that one wished. Any analysis of their receptiveness to evangelization is conspicuously absent in the first impression of the people's nature. However, if some of the Spaniards set out to the New World with thoughts of plunder and glory at the forefront of their minds, it is certain that others truly were concerned first and foremost with bringing the true faith to an empire of pagans. Cortes wrote regularly back to Charles V from his expedition, and in his fourth of these letters, he urged that the emperor to send to his land many devout monks who are zealous for the conversion of the Indians. There was no shortage of monks ready to respond to such call. It is clear that the idea of a whole new world filled with human beings still living and dying without the light of Christian truth was one that appealed powerfully to the imaginations of many European Christians. They need to enlighten these people was obvious, and so to many were the potential opportunities. If the natives proved receptive to Christianity, then there could be a chance to begin afresh and create a new source society founded on Christian faith and values, without the corruptions and complications of the old world. In short, the same adventurous ambition, spirit of optimism that possesses the conquistadors had its spirituality aspected analog among the missionaries. This is hard. When the first officially sanctioned missionary arrived in Mexico City in 1524, the optimism prevailed. The natives had certainly engaged in some barbaric ritual, but once they had been re-educated, they seemed to show every promise of making good Christians. They appeared to be humble, naive, and unworldly, placid, and without inclinations to greed or malice. All of these attributes filled the friars with hope, for these were, after all, many of the very same qualities that they themselves strove for in their service to God. Sorry about that. Notwithstanding its practices of human sacrifice, and idolatry aspect of the Nahaus religion also seemed encouraging to the friars. The fact that they were inclined to ceremony and devotion was definitely a positive quality, and certain of the native rituals resembled Christian counterparts well enough that they seemed to the friars to be types, prefigurations of the true religion, perhaps nurtured by some divine providence to prepare them for conversion. No doubt, buoyed by these auspicious signs, the friars proceeded in a way that markedly shows these high hopes and ideas. Their starting point was to learn the new language and observe their culture. I started figuring myself out. In itself was no small thing for his to this attitude of culturally studying about we owe almost all of our understanding of the pre-conquest aspects for the actual business of converting the heathen. It is apparent that the first missionaries began with an idealistic conviction that they could follow the apostolic example, and when convert solely through their eloquence, the divine truth behind their words. Juan de Torquemada, wait, Juan de Torquemada recounts how the lords of Tlaxcala were brought to repentance for sins they had committed by Franciscan, who urged them to do penance by scourging themselves to convince them they should do this, put aside his habit, and began to lash himself with great vigor and severity. The Tlaxcalans, seeing discouraging himself for an offense he had not committed, for which they knew themselves to be guilty, were thus abashed and amazed, and themselves with humiliation and discouraged himself. The account may be well exaggerated, for they do like effects, but the ideal behind it is clear. The first missionaries aimed to win converts through the example of their own saintly behavior and the power of their preaching. The initial optimism of the missionaries and their conviction that the Nahuas would be a good convert seemed to be well funded. They accepted many Christian rituals and ideas of the remarkable swiftness and ease, and accounts from the missionaries of the 1530s are all full of hyperbolic reports of how many millions of Indians have already been converted and baptized. Zumarragon in 1531 said no more than 1,500,000 of them, while Motolinia in 1536 reported about 5 million. Initial impressions of the Nahuas Sincerity were also very promising. Zamaraka, Prince of the Missionary Schools, I'll bring him to the priest home. I love his father's. Being choose and cover, however, especially in the pain, and have achieved a good heart before God. Super rhetoric. Super such rhetoric might lead one to believe that missionary's efforts were an unambiguous success, but it was not the only strand of opinion concerning the Indians. Bad currency at the time, alongside these coin reports that glorified the missionaries' efforts. What would later come to be called the spiritual conquest was a converse strain of negative opinion. From the first, there had been those who had seen the natives as nothing more than barbaric, cannibalistic heathens whose culture consisted of demonic and profane rituals. Francisco de Aguilar, for example, doubted that there could be another kingdom in the world where the devil was honored with such reverence. Such pessimistic judgments of the native populations were undoubtedly more compelling to the lady who did not have the friars' investments in the Indian spiritual well-being. Need a conception of the Indians. The vision was far more convenient for the conquering Spaniards, since it would help justify whatever abuses they cared to inflict upon them. Oh my god. Even among the missionaries, certain reservations and caveats quickly came to color. Their initial positive views of the converts. Within only 2 years of arriving and beginning their work, first missionaries came to believe that rural exploitation was not enough. The fickle Indian needed physical chastisement to impress lessons upon him. This view was official. Sanctioned in 1539 by using light punishment and forced by a meeting of the hands of the three missionaries ordered working in Mexico. Furthermore, a cultural contact continued became apparent to the missionaries. The Indians had no satisfactory understanding of the rituals and ceremonies that readily embraced the friars and was implied with a fundamental lack of spirituality. Worst of all, select cases have been emerged in which the Indians while accepting baptism and becoming to come to pray and continuing to venerate their own idols and spirit. Influenced by all this, the view began to take among the missionaries that the Indians was best seen as recalcitrant and somewhat backward child. In need of constant supervision and correction to see that he didn't slip back into the evil ways. I can't do this anymore. Such conceptions of your novels of the missionaries continue glorifying their success. That was hard. I'm gonna go. Yeah.